You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox President Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Intelligence Podcast. Catch us live weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. Listen on demand wherever you get your podcasts or watch us live on YouTube.
We did have a 4.7 magnitude tremor near White House Station, New Jersey. That's according to the U.S. Geological Survey. That's the Bloomberg reporting. Brendan Sapienza joins us, Bloomberg deputy team leader for the U.S. International Breaking News. Brandon, what do we have on this? I mean, we don't get earthquakes every day here in the New York metro area. What do we know so far?
So no damage has been reported by New Jersey and New York. Both the governor of New Jersey and New York have been briefed. Mayor Adams has been briefed. And so far, there's nothing to report as far as any catastrophic damage, which is good, especially for New York City with our subways.
Well, how about this? FAA says ground stop at JFK and Newark airports. That's Bloomberg News reporting coming across the terminal. So
it's something.
It's something, I guess.
Now, is New Jersey known for its geological activity?
Well, the last few earthquakes that have been felt in New York have centered in the New Jersey, Pennsylvania area. So it's certainly not the most uncommon thing for it to happen there, but just an earthquake in general is a sort of unnatural phenomenon.
See, it is your fault. Told you.
But if my plane is delayed because of a 4.7 little tremor, if I'm sitting on the tarmac in JFK, I'm going to be upset.
If I'm sitting on a tarmac in JFK and I feel the ground rumble, I'm freaking out. Okay, so there's that too. Also, can you put into perspective sort of the reverberations felt in New York? Like, I think that's like the first time I felt like little tremors like over time that were like a couple seconds, but this was very different. I've lived in New York my entire life.
So the epicenter of the earthquake was actually a very low in the ground. It was only a kilometer down, which is very unique in the fact that you will feel it more the shallower above ground that it is. And in this case, it was 1 kilometer. They felt it even in Boston. So you could feel it quite far depending on how low on the ground it is. Usually they're much lower, especially in places where it's more common for earthquakes to be felt.
Do you remember, what was the last earthquake that we had in this area on the east? That was the one in Washington, around Virginia,
yeah,
that closed the Washington Monument, in fact.
Yeah, it was a number of years ago now, at least.
And the National Cathedral also had to be closed because there were, you know.
Did you look that up or did you know this?
No, I knew. I was here.
It's fair enough.
That was the last time the building shook. So.
All right, so, Brandon, what are the officials saying? Or, I mean, do we expect aftershocks or any of that type? I don't know.
Well, you live in California.
Yeah.
That's why this is, like,
yeah,
nothing for you.
I'm not
He's
the right
so
person
skeptical.
Here for this.
He's like, who cares? You guys, you know, suck it up. He's
Hold
that
my
guy.
Beer.
But yeah, exactly. But what have we heard from, say, the governor, the mayor, any word from Jersey officials?
So, actually, we just got, right before I came on, we just got an emergency alert from New York City that residents are still advised to remain indoors. So I guess the possibility of aftershocks is still there. New Jersey activated their state operations emergency management unit. So I guess the possibility is still there. It's unclear though for now, but right now everything seems to be okay.
All right. Also, I think Kathy Hochul was talking that they're gonna be assessing the damage, but the FAA is saying ground stop at JFK and Newark airports. I mean, don't know where LaGuardia is in all of that, but I think we're definitely looking forward to that
Queens.
As well.
This is Queens. We can take it.
I guess that's true. You think Newark would be used to it also.
Exactly.
But again, I just point back to Michael McKee that 2.5 to 5.4 is often felt but only causes minor damage, and that estimated number of them each year is 500. Thousands. So to your point, like maybe we can handle it. Maybe it's okay, Brandon.
Yeah, the thing you have to worry about is a lot of New York City building codes, for good reason, aren't meant to deal with earthquakes because it's just such an uncommon thing. So it'll be interesting to see how the older buildings really hold up with the shaking.
And this is the point about California, is like you guys are prepped for this.
Yes.
Like we're not.
Yes.
It's the same way that like we can do snow, but right. Florida can't. Like right. It's like we're just not used to certain things. So it'd be interesting to see how that shakes out. Yes,
and
John Tucker.
I would point out that yesterday's storm had a far bigger impact.
Oh my God.
In terms of like down trees, an individual killed in Rye from a falling tree, and power outages as well. So put it all in context.
So we're getting some plenty of weather-related issues here.
And then
in the
remember
greater...
the whole like... eclipse thing that's going to happen
Monday.
Pretty soon the locusts and the frogs will come.
The Yankees pushed their game back from 2 o'clock to 6 o'clock. The world's just going nuts here. Brandon, thank you very much for joining us. Brandon Sapienza, Bloomberg Deputy Team Leader for U.S. and International Breaking News.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Intelligence Podcast. Catch us live weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. You can also listen live on Amazon Alexa from our flagship New York station. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130.
Labor non-farm payroll numbers that came in today, much better than expected. Joni Biley joins us here, Chief Workforce Analyst at EmployBridge. She joins us live here in our Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studio, so that's a good thing. Joni, I guess it's just any way you look at it, a really solid jobs number today. What do you take of it?
Yeah, you know, it definitely exceeded all expectations, you know, across the board. Yeah, I thought it would be a pretty good job report, but I didn't think it was going to start with a three in front of it. When you break down the numbers, though, you will see, obviously, most of this job growth continues to come from the government sector, the healthcare sector, and leisure and hospitality. And so those sectors have really been performing the best over, you know, the last year, you know, certainly even into 2 years. There are some other sectors, though, that are a little bit more challenged, and we're not seeing that growth, you know, come across. And so I'll be looking over the next few months, are we going to start to see growth back in like manufacturing, which was flat? The industry that I'm in is the temporary staffing industry. I'm also the chair of the American Staffing Association. So really look at that sector across the board of what's happening. And that sector hasn't added jobs really in about 2 years. So we've seen decline. So though that headline number is really strong, it's not...
There are things you're thinking about.
Yeah, like when you dig into it, it's not robust across the board.
It does feel like a lot of the conversation is now centered around immigration and how immigration has actually provided a lot of workers, and that's why we keep growing so strongly. In your research, what do you see in that?
Yeah, you know, I was looking at some of the immigration numbers, and when you look at our overall labor force, immigrants make up about 18% of the labor force.
Has that grown?
It has grown. I think it grew in the early 2000s for many years. The pandemic, of course, you know, everything kind of shut down, but we're starting to see those numbers tick up as well. So the demand there is really, though, for skilled workers.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, Torsten Slok, who is the chief economist at Apollo Global, you know, he was out with a really cool chart today right after the data came out. Foreign-born workers contributing to labor force growth. And over the last 2 months, there's been a net decline in native-born workers with this data set. And all of it has come from foreign-born workers. So it certainly is kicking into the labor force. What do you see on this, like, in your business, the temporary stuff and... Where are you seeing that, and how have the trends changed there?
Yeah, so Ewan, it's interesting. I follow his work. EmployBridge is owned by Apollo, so we look closely at his data every morning. I get his emails.
Yep.
But what we see in our business is EmployBridge really provides staffing for supply chain.
Okay.
So manufacturing, logistics. You know, transportation, we staff a lot in call centers. There has been, you know, certainly a softening in those sectors over the last few years. The hot topic sometimes, you know, in those types of jobs is, of course, we're always focused on placing documented workers, mm-hmm. And that is extremely important. But there is a challenge, I think, in some of the lower skilled jobs where you might run into, you know, some employers that aren't following
yep.
all of the guidelines. But we are seeing demand start to come back in transportation, in logistics, call center, customer service. All of those jobs are coming mm-hmm. back. And really strong, you know, still strong wages across the board in those areas.
Do you get the sense that how has employer behavior over the last few years changed, and that how has that changed the temp landscape? Because usually maybe you'd lay people off and then get temps back in order to see if the demand was going to be there. Has that now changed a little bit?
Well, I think employers are still wanting flexible workforce. They use temporary labor certainly to ramp up and ramp down. I think it's why we've seen the sector really been hit the hardest over the last 2 years, as employers, when they go to cut back, they don't want to cut their permanent employees.
Yep.
So they will let the temporary workers go first. But right now, we're seeing a lot of optimism. They're talking about hiring and ramping up. And so maybe we really did have that soft landing where now things will start to stabilize, and we'll see that employers will add not only to their permanent payrolls, but also to temporary staffing and flexible workforce models.
Do you see in your work at EmployBridge, do you see regionality here in terms of the labor market? I mean, is everybody just flocking to Texas and Florida and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I mean, it's strong though. Also, you know, in the north, certainly if you look the automotive, you know, industry, and with the building of all the EV plants, there is a demand certainly for workers in manufacturing, even though we're not seeing it in the numbers today. Like, you look at the mm-hmm. manufacturing number, and of course,
but the ISM manufacturing was pretty strong,
right?
That we got earlier in the week.
Yeah, so. And that was very optimistic. So I think we're going to start to see growth in the manufacturing sector and growth in manufacturing jobs, certainly into this year, but even more so next year and beyond.
Are you based in Florida?
I do live in Florida, but I am a New Yorker at heart.
Okay, I get that.
Yes.
I like to just get a sense of how's the labor market down there? Or, I mean, is it just as crazy as the headlines seem to make it believe? Because it seems like here in New York, the story was everybody was flocking down to Florida. Even like our big Wall Street folks are heading down there. What's it like to be in South Florida these days?
Yeah, so yeah, I do live in South Florida, and there's a, you know, strong demand. A lot, of course, in leisure and hospitality.
Right.
You know, you still see restaurants can't find enough workers. They won't even have all of their tables staffed, you know, and there's long wait lines. So the economy certainly is strong. People are moving there. Housing prices are continuing to still rise.
Is that right?
Yes.
Wow. Because, you know, just an anecdote in my town I've shared with these two. A friend of mine owns a restaurant locally here in New Jersey, and for the first time in several years, he now is fully staffed. And he realized, people who bust the table and wash the dishes, those are undocumented workers. And for the last several years, he hasn't had full hours. But now he's back to fully staffed. And so I don't know how that all plays out.
Yeah, Florida isn't there quite yet.
I know Florida's not there.
but maybe they will get there soon.
So what's the next, what's next on your plate? Like, what's the next thing you're looking at and focusing on?
Well, I think, you know, it was great to see the household survey today, that we saw the growth in the labor, you know, the size of labor force grew by 479,000. So that to me is a number I really watch. I'm always looking at the size of the workforce, labor participation. Do we have more people saying, yes, I want to participate in the workforce? I do believe, though, that employers are going to need to start focusing on training and mm-hmm. upskilling workers. That is going to be very important, because the jobs are changing so rapidly. You know, we see it with AI, the technology, robotics, in all sectors, not just in supply chain, but in all sectors. And so people are going to need to learn how to work with those skills.
And where do they get work? Are they working hybrid still? Is that that's the thing?
Well, in supply chain, they're back.
So they're
they really are.
Right.
But in most of the other professional and business service sectors, they're in the office one day a week, sometimes fully remote, really companies
Unless you're in the radio business, then it's pretty much
TV.
Yeah,
business.
You guys are here every day.
Every day.
Yeah. Yes. Not that Paul talks about that all the time.
All the time.
But if you worked in supply and logistics, you I know, too I'd would be back in the office.
Back.
So
yes.
There you go. All right, Joni, thanks a lot. We really appreciate it. Oh. So lovely to see you in person. Joni Biley is Chief Workforce Analyst at EmployBridge, joining us here in the studio. Taking a look at these markets here, the idea of U.S. exceptionalism still kind of stand relatively strong.
From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox President Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Intelligence Podcast. Catch us live weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. Listen on demand wherever you get your podcasts or watch us live on YouTube.
So let's get right to what to do with these markets. At some point, you think that high yields are going to wind up hurting the equity market. That doesn't seem to be the case. We're recouping some of those losses from yesterday. Grace Lee is Senior Portfolio Manager for Columbia Threadneedle, and she joins us now. Grace, when does the 10-year at 4.34% hurt the equity market, for example?
Morning, Alex. Thanks for having me. I think today's news was actually a nice sigh of relief for all the equity market investors who've been pretty much wringing their hands all week on somewhat stronger economic data. But the wage gains were less than, I think, were certainly very healthy, but not anything to be alarmed about. And as far as where rates are, I think the bigger picture is that when you look at what happened in first quarter, you did have rates going up, and you had or bond yields going up, and expectations of rate cuts actually coming down through the quarter, and still the market rallied. So I think we're kind of getting used to that growth is actually okay, and the market can live with that and still power higher and broaden out, which I think is another key point. And so I think it might be a good scenario all around.
Grace, if we are seeing some broadening out in the participation in the equity markets, what sectors would you be looking at outside of, you know, whatever the magnificent number is these days?
Well, I think there's a lot of unmagnificent sectors and companies that people are starting to look at a little bit more. And again, going back to what happened in first quarter, it was a revival in things like energy and financials, which I think people would be hard pressed to call those magnificent sectors typically. But if you look at where oil prices are, if you look at just the underperformance in a lot of the financials last year, these have a lot of catch up to play even after some of the strength in first quarter. So I think looking outside of just technology, which we still like technology, but there are certainly other alternative ways to play those trends, as well as looking at what sectors really haven't participated.
Well, let's go to energy for a second, because part of there was one narrative yesterday that talked about how the rally in oil, and particularly Brent to $90, was a trigger for the equity market to sell up. Do you buy that? And I mean, do you like think that's true? And then also, do you buy energy at these levels here, or do you have to wait for a dip?
Well, we're pretty fully invested in energy right now. And whether it's a positive, I think people are clearly concerned about whether we'll see much higher gas prices, which could really, drive the inflation fears again. But for now, it seems like everything again is still coexisting peacefully, higher energy prices and still decent growth overall without overheating in the economy.
Grace, we're going to soon shift gears back to earnings mode. We got JP Morgan next Friday, I guess, kicking off some of the really big earnings. What are you going to be looking for this quarter from corporate America?
So I think there's a couple things to be looking for. Again, I think looking at where the economy is broadening out and seeing if that can continue beyond Magnificent Seven, big tech, as well as looking to see if the AI trade does still stay strong. I think you do need a little bit of that to continue for the markets to still be happy, I guess. But then also, you know, for the big banks that start to report, I think there's two things. Obviously, the strength of the consumer. Most of the CEOs have consistently been saying that the consumer is very resilient and that credit trends are still benign. So we'll see if that continues. And then to see what the banks themselves are saying about their interest income trends, given that rates might stay higher for longer, and that might actually be a positive for them.
Okay, so now it's official, guys. Did you guys feel, you're in Boston, Grace, so you didn't feel this, but there was an earthquake, right? There was tremors. It just crossed the Bloomberg. Tremors felt throughout New York City region as buildings shake. We weren't crazy. So we were sitting in the radio studio, Grace, and we're all like, what is that? It felt like we were on some kind of like little roller coaster ride, and apparently it was real. We were not crazy that we thought that.
Well, there's a bucket list thing for me.
Well, we could still be crazy.
List, yeah. Well, both things can be true. It's a bucket list.
Yeah.
Tremors in a building in New York City.
Yep.
Done. Paul crossed that off. All right, Grace, what else are you watching? You mentioned earnings season. How are we positioned here? Like, how is a good way to play it? What else are you looking at?
Well, I think in the consumer sector, there have been a lot of mixed signals recently. Some of the off-cycle earnings reports have been a little bit more cautious and negative. And yet, you know, when you talk to companies, you hear random data points like the auto companies in Detroit saying that they can't make enough six-figure SUVs to keep in stock. There's so much demand out there, or that the cruise lines are seeing people spending $1,000 a day on cabanas. And yet you see pullbacks at places like Olive Garden. So really just trying to understand that dichotomy a little bit better. You know, maybe it's just consumers prioritizing certain wants over certain needs, or, you know, it's, I think they're irrational, and maybe we're just, you know, we'll try and make a little bit more sense of out of how healthy the consumer is and how much they can continue to keep the economy going.
Grace, how much do you, I mean, AI was obviously a huge, huge theme in 2023, continuing into 2024. It's not just NVIDIA, it's broadening out. Is that something you guys at Columbia Threadneedle try to get exposure to? And if so, how have you done it?
Yeah, so across the firm, we've been very focused on this. And, you know, as I focus more on the value and income sectors, I do have to look for more tangential ways to play. So it does fall into old economy technology companies like Dell and IBM, as well as some industrial companies. Let's say a Johnson Controls gets 10 to 15% of their revenue from data centers in terms of building management systems, things like that. Utility companies like Avistra Energy, which has nuclear assets that are unregulated that can really benefit from increases in power prices. So we do look for other ways to play, but you know, certainly a lot of my growth peers within the firm are very bullish on the more traditional AI ways to play. So the NVIDIAs and those types of names.
Yes, that's what I'm saying, the power players. I'm glad you brought that up. That was all the conversation down in Houston a couple weeks ago, that like if you need the data centers, you need the chips, you gotta have the power. And those power providers, particularly nuclear, like really well set up for those data centers. What do you think we're gonna hear about margins before we let you go? Because inflation seems to be, I don't know, sticky, stubborn, like you picked the word, what do you think the margin conversation's gonna be?
Well, I think the margin conversation, I think while inflation is stubborn somewhat, managements are still very cautious on adding headcount. And have actually, I think you've seen them, you still see announcements of headcount reductions. So I think margins might actually turn out to be okay. And I would expect that we'll see decent earnings beats still more cautious CFOs.
All right, Grace, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. Grace Lee, Senior Portfolio Manager, Columbia Threadneedle, joining us from Boston via that Zoom thing.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Intelligence Podcast. Catch us live weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. You can also listen live on Amazon Alexa from our flagship New York station. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130.
Breaking earlier this morning was some pretty darn good jobs numbers coming out. 303,000 additional jobs last month. Pretty solid. The street was looking for like 217, so really beat expectations. And when we do have jobs data, we like to check in with Tom Gimbel. Tom is a founder and CEO at LaSalle Network. LaSalle Network's one of the largest staffing companies out there, and they have their finger on the pulse of what's happening out there in the labor market. And Tom, I'm gonna guess you're pretty bullish here about the labor market out there. What'd you take away?
It's party time. It's party time. The music hasn't stopped yet is the message. Now, let's be realistic and say when over 70,000 jobs, right, over 20% of the jobs were government. And I think we've always got to be wary of that. And that's been a big part of these positive job gains. Now, listen, if it wasn't 300 and it was 230,000, it would still be great.
So, Tom, but I get it. Like, I understand that we got to be careful about the government jobs, but there were others too. And I'm just wondering how you see the mismatch, right? Like, do we have the right people for the right jobs? How do you manage it?
Well, I think there's a challenge. So the big part came in healthcare and in service jobs and then construction and government. And so I think we all know by the functionality of our government that the qualifications for those jobs aren't very high. So anybody can do those apparently. And then when we look at construction, you need people who are willing to throw hammers and do the blue collar work. And we've got challenged with that. A lot of people don't want to do that. And you get into, you know, the really the validation of where our immigration policies are, both legal and illegal, of how to fill those jobs. And the same thing on the healthcare and the service side. So, you know, what we're not seeing is a lot of white collar jobs in the private sector. And that's a big thing. That's a challenge.
So, Tom, how about the wage increase, about 4.1%? That still seems pretty solid to me. What do you make?
I'm surprised by that. However, at the same time, we're not seeing really inflation decline and everything's costing more. I mean, we're in a really, the Venn diagram for this will end up going in the Smithsonian because we have a really unique situation where the stock market keeps going strong, unemployment is low, wages are rising, inflation is too high, and at the same time, interest rates are higher than they have been in years upon years, and nothing's stopping this. And that's just a really, really crazy situation that no one has an answer.
But, you know, it does raise the question for me that maybe there's the economy is just stronger than we all think and that we can add 300, 200, 250,000 jobs. And that doesn't mean that we're overheating. It doesn't mean that the market is super tight, that we're just kind of growing. Is there any truth to that as you see it?
Yeah, listen, the truth is self-evident. So I agree with that. The real problem we have is the ancillary things that funnel that. And what's happening is we've got, you know, why is the service sector and hospitality up? Because more people are traveling. How are people traveling when everything costs more? Because they're spending money and debt's going up. We have the national debt, which keeps increasing, and we have personal debt that keeps on increasing. And that just means we're kicking the can forward both individually and as a government. I gotta tell you, that's not good. And eventually it's gonna come up and somebody's gonna have to pay the piper, whether it's on the consumer side and the government side. And so that's what's fueling this economy when I see all the service sector jobs being had. So I get even on the construction side, we have, if it's home construction that's going on and there's new homes being built, that's because people are buying homes. How do you buy that? You buy that on debt with a mortgage and the financing and the rates are higher. And how do you do that? Then you gotta raise wages to pay for that, which fuels inflation. You know, there's some real, real economic challenges that nobody wants to answer and we don't have a leader to tell us about it.
It seems like we're seeing some reporting here from Bloomberg, the black unemployment rate increased to the highest since August of 2022. What do you think is behind that, Tom?
I mean, I think you get into a little bit of the social science on this, but I think in a situation where we have two very different views on society, and I don't mean black versus white, I just mean on what's appropriate. I think you've got people of color who feel that they're left behind. And I think that you have a situation, whether it's right or wrong, due to education and due to job abilities and due to the jobs that they're offered, is that when they're unemployed, is it because they're not getting looks, or is it because they're quitting the workforce or quitting jobs because they're not happy with the roles and what they're doing? And it's something that, you know, we need some help. There needs to be a public-private partnership when we see numbers like that to help change that narrative.
Well, also it feels like we need that when it comes to immigration also. I mean, the surge in immigration, as long as it's legal, could be very helpful to fill some of those jobs that you were talking about. How do you talk about that with companies? What's the conversation around that?
Yeah, so there's two different types of immigration problems we have in this country. And I think where people want to default to is the southern border, which is a real issue. However, the challenge that's been going on for over a decade is the H-1B visa problem. Yeah. And that is people that we educate in this country, we send back to other countries. They're college educated. They can't get into the country to do strong white collar jobs. And they go other places and they stimulate other economies where they could be doing that here and filling jobs that we don't have the talent and people to fulfill. So that's number one. Number two is on the illegal immigration issue, is there's the societal impact of what's going on, of the safety concerns, the measles cases in Chicago, and all the different things that are coming up in different cities. But you also have the ability to do the work. And there's, you know, there's just a quiet little secret that people didn't talk about. And that was, as long as illegal immigration was somewhat controlled for the past 50 years, 100 years, we needed that. A lot of people use it for cleaning ladies at the golf courses and the restaurants and the dishwashers. That people came in, it was easier, they didn't have to wait. People like paying people under the table. It didn't contribute to the taxes, but it solved work problems. And now that's gone because there's way too much illegal immigration and it can't be controlled at the southern border. And that creates huge societal conflict. And so we're dealing both with labor issues and societal issues at the same time. And that's why there's all these challenges that exist.
Yep, very good. Tom, really appreciate getting your thoughts here today. Always love checking in with you on Jobs Day. Tom Gimbel there giving us his thoughts here on the strong labor market.
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for the Future Investor Data Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Intelligence Podcast. Catch us live weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. You can also listen live on Amazon Alexa from our flagship New York station. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130.
Bonds. Boy, what a great time to talk municipal bonds. Eric Kozatsky, Senior Municipal Strategist for Bloomberg Intelligence, calling us from Princeton, New Jersey. Eric, what's new in the municipal bond business?
Wait, did you feel it, Eric? Did you feel it?
Oh, my God. Did we feel it? We're, what, like 15 miles from the epicenter? Yeah. I mean, it was so scary. Ira even hasn't even gotten lunch yet. He's been busy looking up Richter scale measurements.
That means he must be scared. All right, folks. Ira's not eating.
The folks on YouTube, we had, you know, Eric Kozatsky on with us. And sitting right behind Eric is our good friend Ira Jersey, also in Bloomberg Intelligence. Their offices for Bloomberg Intelligence in Princeton, New Jersey, as Eric mentioned, literally like 15 miles away from the epicenter. All right, Eric, so is there municipal bond angle here? I mean, are we going to start issuing more municipal bonds? I'm half joking, but I felt like I had to go there.
Yeah. No, well, I think the good thing here and the takeaway is that there has never been a municipal bond default because of a natural disaster, earthquakes included. So muni bond investors can rest assured this is going to be a non-issue right now. So that's a good takeaway.
Okay. Well, I'm glad we worked that out. So that's quite good.
Exactly.
All right. Okay, my favorite question is, how's issuance? What's going on? What did we learn this week?
You know what? Issuance has been quite decent. I think we're up about 30% year over year. You know, look, tax time tends to be a little bit slower in the municipal market, and I don't think the pop in rates is doing anybody any favors. Any deals that were sort of like waiting to come on the market, they might be held back just to see if rates settle down a little bit. But I think the latest statements by Kashkari really sort of put you know, a little bit of fear into some investors that we're not going to get any cuts this year. So I do think that's going to be impactful as we get into the fall and closer to the election.
So how are municipal bonds trading relative to treasuries these days?
Most excellent. Most excellent. You know, by comparison, I mean, we're outperforming treasuries by 200 basis points.
Wow.
So for those who are just solely focused on total return, it's been a really, really great year. You know, obviously we're still down a little bit, but you're getting the benefit of that carry in the municipal space. You know, from a yield standpoint, and I think that's really where people should be focused, especially if you're concerned about higher taxes. On a comparable basis, right? Tax equivalent yields for those people who are in the highest bracket in New York, you're picking up about 300 basis points over same rated corporates. So, you know, there really is a decent advantage to being in munis right now.
Where have we seen a lot of issuance in the last week? What caught your eye?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff on the pipeline that's coming down in the healthcare space, which I think is super interesting, especially because we put out a report yesterday, and like that tie-in right there, where we talked about how some of the biggest passive ETFs don't really have a lot of exposure in higher ed and in hospitals and in healthcare. So, you know, I think that, you know, as margins improve in that space, they are going to be better performing as we get into the later stages of this year and into next year. And those passive products, they're just not going to participate in those returns.
Talk to us about demand out there. If I'm coming out with a municipal bond, nicely rated, what kind of demand am I going to see?
You know what? People are tripping over themselves to buy stuff on the new issue market. Yeah. I mean, everything that's come has been well oversubscribed. You know, California, I think they sold close to like $2.5 billion of bonds. When you get a bond issue of that size, that's that big, that's a lot of bonds for the market to take down. You know, so we did see a little bit of a spread softening with that. But I think, again, as we sort of, you know, get into the higher demand areas of the year, you know, May, June, July, you know, those spreads are going to revert a little bit.
It wasn't there like a thing about sports and Travis Kelce or something wanted to do something with tax increases to pay for the stadium. That didn't work, did it?
Not so much, right? You know, look, I've always been a sort of questioning the fact that, you know, taxpayers are put on the hook or asked to sort of levy themselves to keep their, you know, hometown sports teams, you know, stay put. And no different in Kansas City. They put a referendum out. It was voted down by the, you know, the taxpayers that they didn't want to increase taxes to pay for the stadium. You know, look, at the end of the day, are they really going to uproot the franchise to move? It's a big lift. The logistics are pretty tricky, especially with one that has a deep-seated championship run like they've had in the last couple of years. So I think that the city is probably going to come up with some tax incentives to keep them there. It just might not be on the shoulders of taxpayers.
All right. So what's on the calendar here that Alex should get excited about over the next couple of weeks?
I'm excited. Do you hear me engaging with munis? I am working. I brought up sports. You guys are missing all these things I'm bringing to you.
It took me like a year to get Matt Miller engaged in munis. You're much quicker than
Matt. And then he left. Right? Yeah, I mean, he was super excited about munis. Look, you know, we go back to sort of those healthcare deals that are coming. They're going to have more spread attached to them. I like deals that I can look at and sort of get into the weeds on the credit and that are just more interesting, right? Look, you can look at a AAA credit that's just like tax-backed, it's okay. It's not that interesting from a credit analyst perspective, but things that are revenue-based, you know, things that have, you know, had a rough couple years, you know, during the pandemic, like the healthcare sector, I think those are sort of recovery stories that'll be more interesting to sort of pick through.
All right. What else you got? What should I be paying attention? What am I going to get excited about for next week? Tell me.
I think you got to get excited just about how much more yield muni buyers are picking up over corporates. You know, as spreads compress in the corporate sector and muni bonds, you know, will trade softer over the next month as people sell them to pay their taxes.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a high net worth person and you're looking to pick up some yield, I think now's the time to be buying.
All right, very good. Mr. Kozatsky, he is our strategist down there in Princeton, kind of this epicenter almost of the earthquake activity in greater New Jersey. Eric Kozatsky, senior municipal strategist for Bloomberg Intelligence. So, you know, it's interesting. You're getting nice yield there on a tax-adjustable basis. I mean, everybody's getting better yield today,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, versus the last few years. But on a tax-adjusted basis, if you live in a high-tax state like I do, you know, it makes a big deal.
This is the Bloomberg Intelligence Podcast, available on Apple, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Listen live each weekday, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern, on Bloomberg.com, the iHeartRadio app, TuneIn, and the Bloomberg Business app. You can also watch us live every weekday on YouTube and always on the Bloomberg Terminal.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.